It's Tony Mac and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplet. That's right. It's week zero. There's live football. I repeat, live football. It might not be the caliber of football we're going to get next weekend. It absolutely is not. But it's football, Aaron. Aaron, welcome in. How are you this morning? The shirt of the week. Tell us what it is and why.
Shirt of the week. We took a poll, and it was between Stanford, Ohio State, and Memphis. And Stanford won the voting by 40% to 30% for the other two. Only 10. We got 10 votes, which was pretty good considering. And I'm actually about to tweet the shirt out as we speak.
Yeah, go check that shirt out if you like it, or if you don't, you have a chance to vote next week. Follow us at Tony Mac Triplet. You can follow me individually at Tony Mac UMP. You can follow Aaron individually at A Trip Tennis. That's right. So if you don't like the shirt, or if you think it should have been another shirt, go vote next week. We would really appreciate that. We'd love to get Aaron in the shirt you want. He's an avid sports shirt collector. And he's going to wear one every single week. We got a great show ahead for you guys today. Mainly, it's not really anything Aaron or myself are going to do. It's mainly just the things we get to talk about. We're 1 week away from another great opening weekend of college football. So we're going to bring you our college. Next week's mainly going to center around making our picks for that week. So today, towards the end of the show, we're going to give you our playoff picks. We got that coming for you. We're gonna talk about we talked last week about the SEC quarterback situations. We're gonna talk about the running back situations, or just the rushing situations, period, in the SEC, and a lot of breaking news as well. We also have your crying Jordan face of the week. Each of us, some good ones there. But first, a story that broke late last night. We're gonna get into right now. Everybody's aware of the Isaiah Thomas blockbuster Kyrie Irving trade that sent Kyrie to Boston, and in return they got Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Ante Zizek, whatever, however you pronounce his name, and the 2018 first round Brooklyn Nets pick. And well, now they're saying, hold on, time out, because after a physical that Isaiah Thomas had to take because of his hip, they're saying that Cleveland might null this trade. They might void this thing, or, you know, kind of have Boston send them something to sweeten the deal. Aaron, what do you think about this?
Well, when I initially saw that this trade was happening, and I knew that a Kyrie trade was impending because of just the distraction that it had become, and it came out that he was threatening to hold out a training camp until he was traded, and I was sitting there thinking, as a LeBron fan, you know, I'm obviously Kyrie made the shot a couple years ago in the finals, but I understand, you know, I kind of just wants to get out of that situation, and I saw that he was ready to, you know, play basketball instead of worry about all that other stuff. And when I saw this trade, I was like, well, it definitely could have been worse for the Cavaliers. And actually, I felt like they got a really good deal out of it, because Isaiah Thomas, while 4 years older than Kyrie Irving, is still an all-star point guard in his own right. Not as good defensively, but still a dynamite scorer. And they got Jay Crowder, who's pretty tough defensively.
You said not as good defensively, as if, like, to compliment one of them defensively. They both suck defensive-wise. And I'm a Celtic fan. No matter what, whether we're getting Kyrie or whether we keep Isaiah Thomas, they both suck.
Neither of them are. Thomas is more of a liability defensively because of his size.
Agreed.
Which kind of just naturally makes Kyrie, I guess, a better defender. But either way. And then they added Zicic or whatever his name. I can't quite pronounce his name. Young guy, big man, and then, of course, Brooklyn's pick. And now And because I saw some of the other options of trade partners and what they had talked about, and all the other ones, it would have been like throwing Kyrie Irving out the window for some of the other trade offers they got. And so I think this one was pretty adequate, and it was fair, and I think that both teams came out good in it. And now with this injury, and I've heard people say, well, I mean, obviously you traded for Isaiah Thomas knowing that he had this this hip injury and has been hindered by it. But at the same time, I also read something interesting saying maybe the Cavs did it to knowing that he was going to have this problem, knowing that they would have this option to veto it in their back pocket, and maybe try to, if they were able to, obviously get something else from Boston or back out completely and get some teams who were panicking that they were already shipped him out, ready to jump on this trade for Kyrie and just send something just absurd to Cleveland in return. So just a really kind of bizarre chain of events that we saw happen last night with all of this unfolding. But just leave it to Cleveland to create more drama in the NBA, because –
Well, it's really just been Kyrie. He's kept the NBA abuzzed. Kyrie and LeBron all off season. And you're right. Cleveland as well getting rid of their GM. But you were talking about the other trade offers offered for Kyrie Irving, and eventually settling with Boston. Well, we knew all along that if Cleveland wanted to get a trade done where they got the better assets, who had the better assets to give, we've known all along that's Boston. That's what Boston's been grouping up for years. All these future picks, keep trading them for more future picks. And with some of these other guys they've eventually brought in playing-wise and started to develop, like Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, they became great trading pieces as well. You didn't really expect Isaiah Thomas to be a trading piece unless it was a trade like this for someone like Kyrie Irving. So we knew that the two places to get the best assets were going to be Boston or Golden State, which it came out that Cleveland did try to trade Kyrie to the Warriors first, mainly because I think that would have been more fitting because there's more pieces there in Golden State that can help LeBron James win a title right now, and that's what LeBron's all about. We talked about who won the trade. I said I was telling you I think LeBron won it more than Cleveland or Boston did because I think they're separate things. But the biggest thing about this whole thing, the hip injury – Cleveland was absolutely aware of what was going on with the hip injury because the hip injury occurred against Cleveland in the playoffs. It knocked him out of the rest of the playoffs while they were playing them in the Eastern Conference Finals. That is a hip injury that has ended NBA players' careers. Isaiah Thomas is pushing 30 years old. So when you say that maybe Cleveland knew about that and had it in their back pocket and had a chance to veto it and just try to test other trade offers, I want to say you're right because that's smart, but Cleveland has done everything that to lead me to believe they're not very smart this offseason. I mean, they got rid of a great GM or a GM that's done a great job. And a lot of people come out and say, well, what did David Griffin do? What did David Griffin do that was so awesome? He gave this contract out that wasn't good, and he did this and that. He managed LeBron James and kept LeBron happy. As soon as David Griffin's gone, it's not even a month before you hear how unhappy LeBron is. He's not refuting rumors that he's gone in a year. He has not refuted one of those. He has not come out and said, no, I'm here in Cleveland, whatever. He's been silent, and that is a big deal. Cleveland really hasn't been that smart about this. And here's the biggest reason I think Boston won this trade. We're talking about Isaiah Thomas and his hip injury. If this exact trade was proposed, the same exact time, but Kyrie was happy in Cleveland, if Kyrie did not express that he wanted out of Cleveland, would Cleveland accept that trade? I don't think they would have. I don't
think they would have either.
And that is why Boston won the deal. They got a guy that a certain circumstance arose to where they had to get rid of him but beyond their power, but they wanted to keep him, but he just didn't want to be there. If he wanted to be there, he's that good of an asset to where they wouldn't have traded him. So that to me is why Boston, I think, if you have to pick between Cleveland and Boston, that's why Boston won this deal. But that's a big thing. Another huge thing happened last night while we were away right before we came on, and that is going to lead us right into our crying Jordan face of the week. Aaron, I'm going to let you start because this coincides with breaking news that happened last night. So hit me with your crying Jordan face of the week. You can see these. We're gonna give them to you. It's maybe something that that's happened to somebody where it turns out to make them look really goofy or silly, disappointing. And we're going to take them, we're going to put the Jordan face on them, and we're going to post them on Twitter so you can see them. But we're going to announce them here. Aaron, crying Jordan face of the week. Week two, second week we're doing it. Hit me with it.
Well, my crying Jordan face didn't really happen until last night. During their preseason game against the Lions in the first quarter, Julian Edelman suffered a non-contact knee injury and limped off the field, and it just looked, and they expect that he has torn his ACL and is going to be done for the season. Now, Julian Edelman is not my crying Jordan face of the week because you never wish for players to get hurt. That's just something that you don't – that I mean, bad fans wish that upon people. But really, you don't want anybody to get hurt. I'm not putting the sad face on Tom Brady. I'm not putting the sad face on Bill Belichick because, you know, their mentality is next man up. They're going to find somebody – probably some undrafted, undersized rookie free agent that'll come out and lead the team in catches and just be one of those fantasy sleepers you pick up on the waiver wire in about week five.
Well, don't forget Kevin Hogan had a fantastic preseason game last night, a couple touchdowns, and they do have Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, so they're going to be just fine. But the crying Jordan face goes to Patriots fans in general because – Patriots fans, I saw some of their tweets last night, and somebody tweeted, it was a picture of, this is Patriots fans to Julian Edelman right now, and it was a gif of Simba pushing Mufasa, and it was actually quite humorous. So I've got my picture is a father-son tandem Patriot fan in the stands, and when you see it, I hope it brings you pleasure because it brought me some pleasure because Patriots fans are freaking out right now over this. And while I think that next to the great Tom Brady, that Julian Edelman is the most valuable piece to that offense, yes, that includes Gronkowski, but the Patriots have proven they can win without Gronkowski. They can win without him in the game. They can win without Edelman in the game. But
just won a Super Bowl without
just
him,
just won
I believe,
a Super Bowl without Gronkowski. So, and Gronkowski, of course, I think he's way more injury prone than people like to admit. And just think about it. If it's third and six, Tom Brady needs a first down. Who's he going to? He's not going to Gronk, he's going to Edelman. Well, really he's going to the guy who's open. But really he's looking for Julian Edelman. And that's where they're going to miss him the most, but they're going to be just fine. But the Patriots fans are the ones having the freak out, so they are my crying Jordan face of the week, and it just happened, like we said, broke news last night.
I get what you're saying. Stop worrying about it. I mean, I understand it's a player you like, but chill the hell out. You're probably going to be in the AFC Championship minimum again this year, so you're fine. My crying Jordan face of the week, that was a good one, by the way. I went with something a little different. I wanted to go with Odell Beckham Jr. staring at this is a guy who wants to be the highest paid, not just receiver, but the highest paid player, period, in the NFL. And on the day of a preseason game, he goes outside and does something that we've been advised not to do since we've had news of the eclipse. He goes out there and he takes a video of himself staring at the sun without any glasses on. Wanted to do that one because he turned around in that very same night in that preseason game. He turned around and had an ankle injury. I decided to go bigger scale here. Tony Mack crying Jordan face of the week is the solar eclipse from 2017. That's right. Mainly because it was way overhyped and it turned out to be something that disappointed a lot of people. It disappointed just about everybody. Me, for myself, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. I mean, I knew it wasn't going to get 100% dark here. I expected it to get a little darker than it was, but it didn't get 100% dark. It was over really quick, but it was still really cool. It was exactly what I expected it to be. That was my expectation. It met my expectation, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But so many people were just overhyped. They expected like a winter wonderland to come in the 2 seconds that it was completely dark. And those who got the totality of it, that got the complete darkness of this eclipse, really enjoyed it and thought it was cool. But too many people across the United States thought that they were going to get totality, and they didn't, and they overhyped this thing to be something that it wasn't. The most disappointing part of the eclipse, really wish that right when the sun right when the moon was crossing the sun, I was really hoping we'd get like a Morgan Freeman or a God voice over to just pop over like the entire sky. You know what I mean? Like, how awesome would that have been?
Just narrating the event.
Bro, why couldn't we get that? Now the sun is eclipsed by the moon. Right? Over the entire planet. I mean, a lot of people believe, my fiance will love this one. She believes the government's tapped into just about everything we have. There's got to be something you could have done. Got Morgan Freeman to narrate the eclipse.
For some reason, that makes me think of in Spider-Man 2 when Alfred Molina, who's playing Doc Ock, is working with his fusion machine, and it zooms in on his face, and he's like, "The power of the sun in the palm of my hand." That's what that makes me think of.
Okay, if you guys aren't, you guys are just tuning in, we're talking about our crying Jordan faces of the week. Aaron went with the Patriots fans freaking out a little too much, he believes, over Julian Edelman's injury. I went with the solar eclipse 2017. You can check out those pictures. Yes, I actually have a picture of the eclipse with the crying Jordan face on it on Twitter. Go check that out. I retweeted it from Tony Mac UMP, or you can check it out at Tony Mac Triplet right there on Twitter. All right, guys. We got the fun stuff out of the way. Well, it's all fun, but we got the goofy stuff out of the way. We're going to jump into SEC running backs. Best situations we got going on around there. Understand, not everybody's back from last year, but there's a lot of great rushing talent coming up here in the SEC. So why don't we take a quick break, Aaron, and when we come back, we'll jump right into that. It's Tony Mac and the Triplet right here. Sports Radio 730, 103.9 at the Ump. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. Welcome back, Tony Mac and the Triplet. Week zero. Week freaking zero. It's just the biggest appetizer that you can hope for. We got a game in Australia tonight, Stanford Rice, a little Pac-12 after dark for us, a little different over there in Australia. But we've got a bunch of other things going on. We got Colorado State playing, I believe. South Florida's playing. You get a chance to look at that. I mean, there's just intrigue in some of these games. You get a chance to watch Charlie Strong, you know, get his pretty much second chance. And what's their quarterback's name? Something Flowers or
Flowers.
Yes. Quentin Flowers. There you go. I knew it was Quentin something Flowers. And that's there's a lot of intrigue around him because a lot of people believe the combination of Charlie Strong getting there and Quentin Flowers being back is the reason they're ranked in the top 25. So week zero, we got a lot of games. We can talk about some of those here in just a little bit. But first, we're going to talk about what everybody wants to hear, something we're really excited to talk about. SEC running backs, Aaron. We jumped into the quarterbacks last week, all right? There are so many returning rushers. The interesting thing about the SEC is when you look at the list of guys who topped the list last year. The top three rushers in the SEC a year ago were obviously Darius Geis. Interesting because he didn't start every game because he was behind Leonard Fournette. Still led the league in rushing. 7.58 yards a carry. The second leading rusher in the entire SEC last year was not a running back. It was a quarterback, and no, that quarterback was not Jalen Hurts. The second best rusher in the SEC last year was Nick Fitzgerald from Mississippi State. Ran for 1,375 yards, 12 yards shy of rushing for more yards than Darius Geis. Wouldn't have guessed that.
I'm sure that slips a lot of people's mind, but it's amazing what kind of he had a great season, but it's overshadowed by the fact that Mississippi State had such a poor season a year ago.
A lot of people are high on him this year. Think they can turn things around, maybe knock off maybe somebody like an LSU or something like that. Which certainly I think they can shake some things up. Maybe give somebody over there in the West a tough time this year. And it starts right there with Fitzgerald. It appears that he's going to be everything for that team. Third best rusher in the SEC last year, Raleigh Williams, obviously not playing this year. I believe he got hurt and retired from football. He would have been a junior this year. So that makes the second highest returning running back, not rusher. He would be third next to Fitzgerald. The second best returning running back, yardage-wise. Ralph Webb from Vanderbilt. Do not forget what Ralph Webb did last year. Vanderbilt had a great season a year ago for Vanderbilt standards. They had guys like, you know, Zach Cunningham and things like that to go their way. Don't have it this year. Don't expect Vanderbilt to be very good this year, but I think Ralph Webb will be a sore or a bright spot for a very sore football team. Aaron, is there a guy on here that that sticks out to you that you would like to point out? Maybe people don't really understand how good of a season he had last year and what they got coming back. I mean, I know we're going to get into some other great situations going on, but there's one guy in particular that kind of like Ralph Webb that a lot of people don't realize did very well last year, and that's Benny Snell from Kentucky. He was the eighth best rusher in the SEC a year ago, just a little over 1,000 yards, and he was beat out by his own running back, Stanley Williams, had 1,100 yards. I'm not sure. I'd have to double check to see if Stanley Williams is coming back. I don't think
no,
he is.
No, I think he's I want to say he's playing for Denver.
Yeah.
I think I'm not positive.
Arky Shea! Woo!
You're on the air?
Yeah. What's up, man?
Still doing a show?
Yeah.
Go ahead and do the show.
That's okay. Showstopper. Big man, Arky Shea. We're talking about Benny Snell, Arky Shea. If you're not familiar with him, like a lot of people, I don't think.
Running back out of Kentucky?
Yeah, see, he's familiar with him.
Yeah.
It's a name to pay attention to. Kentucky, a team where a lot of people are expecting to at least shake some things up in the East. Some people expect them to win the East in the SEC. I think it starts in the backfield, obviously, for Kentucky, but Benny Snell, big, big part of what they're going to do. Aaron, there are three really interesting running back situations going on in the SEC. Give me your top three.
Well, I think top three, it's hard to go away from Alabama, and they don't have a guy. Like, if you talk about Alabama, you think that they've got the system backs where they just plug and chug the same kind of guys every year, fast, big, physical, you know, guys who look like NFL running backs, every single one of them. And Bo Scarborough kind of fits that plug and chug running back mold, but they've really got about four guys that would start on a lot of other teams, and I honestly don't think that any of them are going to hit 1,000 yards. I think Jalen Hurts is going to lead the team in rushing because he's going to get more carries than all the other ones because they're all going to split. I think they're going to give Scarborough the ball. I think they're going to give Harris the ball. Damian Harris, and then Najee Harris is going to get the ball as well. I think he's too talented not to get the ball. So I think and then you still got Joshua Jacobs, who I think he's going to kind of take a back seat to the other three guys because he's just not quite as talented. But I think those other three guys it's just going to be splitting carries and feed the hot hand at the time. And Hurts is obviously going to get his share. So that's a great situation because you don't really, if somebody gets hurt, you know, you've got a equally talented guy coming up next behind him. And then I think you've got LSU, who's really you got the bell cow back in Darius Geis, and they are always talented behind, but he's gonna have to have a monster season. But I think that he's the best running back in the SEC. And then I think if Auburn's two guys stay healthy, because I know Kerryon Johnson's been injury prone for the last couple of years, battling some ankle injuries. But if he stays healthy, and then Petway has the same kind of season that he had last year, that Auburn has it going on in the backfield as well, and two guys they can lean on. So I think those are the three that I would say are the best situations, talent-wise. And
so you went with Alabama, LSU, Auburn?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you could also go with Georgia.
Situation-wise, I think you might have to. I mean, I understand Geis. I don't really understand what he's got going on behind him. But, I mean, Georgia's got very good depth right there. You got two seniors, I believe, in Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. So that's really hard not to look at.
It's hard not to look at. They're next on the list. But the reason that I went with LSU is simply because he's the best back in the SEC.
Agreed.
And sometimes you have to go with the best guy out there, and I think it's amazing both seasons that people forget how good of a season he had 2 years ago. Not quite, I mean, obviously not as good as he was last year because he didn't get as many touches. But and this year, it's I mean, last year he was amazing to watch even when Fournette went down. But this year, being it's going to be the load's going to be on him, and I think it's just going to be something special to watch, especially being in probably a run first offense for sure. Over there, and it's going to be interesting to see how we talked about the new offensive coordinator that they've got last week. It's going to be interesting to see how he's going to use him differently in a new system.
Yeah, at four, I would probably put let's see here. At four, I'm probably going to go Georgia. I'll put Georgia at four. Both Michelle, Chubb, even the running backs before them, a lot of injuries over there in Georgia. So I know they're
deep. They've had some bad luck at the running back position with injuries because Nick Chubb was on the same level as Fournette when they were both freshmen coming in. They were both kind of, you know, because Nick Chubb took over for Todd Gurley when Gurley got hurt and had a really good freshman season. And Fournette didn't quite have as good of a freshman season. He was he wasn't the only back, and they had several guys in the backfield that year. And he really didn't come on to the end when he trucked the guy from Texas A&M on Thanksgiving. And that was, I mean, he had some good plays, but that was really his one of his moments. And then when they got to their sophomore year, and everybody was expecting, you know, this guy, both these guys to be just absolutely huge. And Chubb went down, and Fournette, of course, had that season that he had that was just unbelievable, burst onto the scene and was definitely as good as advertised. So Chubb, I think Chubb's got something to prove this year because he got hurt. He came back. I don't think he was quite as effective. And I think he just kind of fell by the wayside, kind of out of people's mind. And I think that had to do with Georgia not being as good of a team as well. But I think he's got something to prove this year. But you're right, they do have depth, but it's all about staying healthy, I think, at that position, at least then the being a trend of being unhealthy at the running back position for Georgia.
Absolutely, and that's why I've got them at four. Three, I'm going to go with LSU because of guys. I don't know much about the situation going on behind him, but point blank, he's the best running back in the SEC, probably in the country. I know that he's got a lot of competition with Saquon Barkley, but I think he's the best back in the country. Extremely explosive, strong. He can do a lot in the open field, so I got to go with him. But I'm going with them third because there are two situations that I think are just better. And number two, I think Auburn, for sure. You've got Cameron Petway and Kerryon Johnson coming back for the Tigers. And obviously, I think as a team, they're in a better situation than LSU is and everything because they finally got that last piece to plug in to an 8-5 team that finished with a loss in the Sugar Bowl. They very easily could have been a 10-11 win team last year with better quarterback play. Running backs really couldn't do much more a year ago with what they were asked to do with the situation around them. Now you can ask more because you've got a competent quarterback, at least we believe, and you've got an offensive coordinator in Chip Lindsey who wants to get the running backs involved in the passing game as well. So I think you're going to see them get involved more in different facets of the game that we didn't see a year ago. Auburn backs did not catch the ball out of the backfield very much last season, but that's something that Chip Lindsey wants to get them involved with. So I think you're going to see a lot of carries. You're going to see a lot of catches. You're going to see them work a lot back there, and it's going to be more of a complete deal for them. So I like them there. And number one, obviously, it's got to be Alabama. And you were mentioning Najee Harris is going to get some carries. When? Like, I just don't know. You would think he would have to because he was the number one back in the country. But Jesus, I mean, you've got Jalen Hurts, who ran for a little over 900 yards last year. Okay, let's see. Yeah, 954 yards. He was almost a 1,000-yard rusher. Damian Harris was their 1,000-yard rusher. And then Bo Scarborough even had 800 yards, and he didn't play till the end of the year. So I think you're wrong with saying they're not going to have a 1,000-yard rusher. I absolutely believe they'll have a 1,000-yard rusher. They might have two, because I think that you're going to get a lot of running back by committee-type deals, but I think you're going to have a main back. You're going to have a guy. Whoever's hot is going to get the majority of the carries, and then the other guy's going to come in to clean up. But like last year, I thought Bo Scarborough was going to be the guy last year, and he didn't come until late. Damian Harris ended up being the 1,000-yard back. Bo Scarborough ended up being the back everybody, you know, knew better. He was the one that broke off the big important runs in the two playoff games and even in the SEC championship game. But a lot of people forgot that Damian Harris was the 1,000-yard back that year. So there's plenty of room. There's as many games as Alabama's going to play. They're probably going to play about 14, maybe 15 games again this year. There's plenty of room for them to get 1,000 yards there. Josh Jacobs, I think, is highly underrated. I think he's a stud. So that's what I honestly think. He could come in and take carries away from Najee. They might. Najee, it's absurd to say, but he could potentially get redshirted. I really don't know the situation that's going on back there because it's unique. And maybe that's why when you look at Alabama and they're struggling in recruiting right now, maybe some of these five-star recruits are looking at their running back situation. I mean, Alabama's going to finish with a good class, don't get me wrong, but they're behind the eight ball right now. I think they only have like 10 recruits right now for the next class. For Alabama standards, they're a little behind. And maybe it's because these five-star guys are looking. They're like, wow, Najee Harris was an absolute monster in high school. He was a beast coming into college, and he's not even playing. I'd love to play for Alabama, but man, in order to get some playing time, I might need to go somewhere else because all these positions are just stacked and too deep. And Alabama seems to be that way everywhere on the field. You know, I mean, they're replacing a lot defensively, but a lot of these guys are so good and they've been sitting out for so long, but they're so talented. They're expected to come in and produce almost like they did a year ago. And it's probably going to happen. And it's like that all over the field, running back-wise. The receiving core for Alabama just continues to get better. And then you add a mobile quarterback to an offense that's always been able to run the ball really, really well since Saban's been there. I mean, I understand everything they lost. I understand Hurts might have some passing problems, but this is still a force to be reckoned with because they have the best coach in the country, but probably the best coach ever. And they're just so deep everywhere. And all of that depth at every position is so well coached.
Alabama this year is interesting because last season, in my opinion, was arguably the best team that he's had since he's been there was last year. You know, they ran the table. They went unbeaten all the way till literally there was a second left and Clemson knocked him off. But I think it was the second best team. His best team, and people are going to argue with me, but people who argue with me, I know you're entitled to your opinion, but I think that your opinion is wrong. Because his best team ever was in 2011. Yeah, they lost to LSU, but that was probably Les Miles' best team ever in 2011 as well. And he lost that one game, and then, of course, they took it to him in the rematch. But they didn't have a close game on the schedule except for that one loss that year.
Talent-wise, you can argue the 2010 team was really good as well for Alabama.
The 2009 team, you mean?
Was it 2009?
2009 was when they won his first one.
No, I'm talking about 2010 when they went 10-3.
Oh, really?
Talent-wise, they were in a fantastic.
They
just underperformed. They got beat, like I said, three times. That was the comeback.
South Carolina
got them, upset them.
And LSU got them.
That team was stacked. They just underperformed. That is probably Nick Saban's most underperformed team, but it's when you're talking about most talented Nick Saban teams, that's absolutely up there. That's got to be rivaled up there.
But I think, like I said, I think 11 was his best team, and then I think last year was his second best team, and you could tell just by the defense, and Alabama's got a great defense every year. People don't understand when Alabama's got a historically great defense, and last year was one of them, and 2011 was one of them. And then there's the other ones that are really, really, really good defenses, but not as good as those. And that's what's going to happen this year, I think. It's not going to be last year's defense. It's not going to be 2011's defense, but it's still going to be a very good defense, and it's going to take a lot to beat them. I think that's going to make a difference. While I think that I do think that they are going to probably run the table, but I think that's where the difference is going to be is on the defensive side, having to just utterly and completely reload, which they do every year. They don't rebuild, they reload. And Ohio State does the same thing. It's the same story. Last year, Ohio State was coming off a historic loss of talent that went in the first round of the draft on both sides of the ball, and they were playing almost exclusively sophomores and freshmen. With the exception of a few juniors and on the defensive side of the ball. And they had a great defense. They made the playoff again. So those two teams just do the same thing every year. But I think Alabama not going to be as strong on the defensive side of the ball, but still going to be a very good defense. I mean, it's just going to be that you're going to get some guy midseason who emerges. He's a junior. He's barely ever played before. And he's going to be on the draft big board going at like number five. So just watch out for something for stuff like that.
I can't wait for next week. Obviously, this week we've talked about several times. It's week zero. Next week, week one, we start off with a big time game. We get to see those guys go into action against Florida State. The Crimson Tide will take them on in Atlanta. Can't wait to predict that game and get into it, but we're not there yet. And we get a show before college football, before week one next week. So I really want to save breaking down that game and picking that game until next week. But I can't wait to get at that one. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to set you up for the next hour of Tony Mack and the Triplet, where we're going to get into our playoff picks. We might even get into a little, that's right, Mayweather-McGregor tonight. That's right here on Sports Radio 730-1039.
Busted and broke, because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
730 and 1039, The Ump. More sports.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. That's right, we're going to break down last segment of the hour, get you set up for the next hour as well. All right, Aaron, saving this one for the last segment here. All right, I got a question for you and the listeners. What would you think about having a guest, when me and Tom are trying to figure this out, Tom's helping me out with this, a guest on Saturdays when it gets closer to the NFL. I know how obsessed you are with fantasy football. We got a guy lined up.
I'm not obsessed with fantasy football. What are you talking about?
Don't lie to me. Don't start. It's too early in the morning to start lying. I can see it in your face. Aaron is absolutely just obsessed. I love fantasy football. It's fun, but I don't take it nearly as serious as this guy does. This guy will have a heart attack watching, you know, garbage time.
And the funny thing is I got into fantasy football about 6 years ago. This will be, I think, my 6 year playing. 2011, the football season, was my first year to play. The year before that, my friends in high school, and I'm still, that's my league. All of my friends from high school, and a couple others typically get in it. And there's typically about 16 people. So they started it my senior year of high school. And they were like, you should play fantasy football. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to play fantasy football. Fantasy football is stupid. It is the dumbest thing ever. And the next year, I was like, okay, I'll play. So I played that 1 year. And the rest is basically history, because now, just thoroughly, thoroughly obsessed with fantasy football. And I think that even just saying that, I think my friends, especially my brother, because he lived with me last year during football season, and so did one of my other friends. He was over there a lot. So my brother doesn't enjoy fantasy football because he's like, Aaron, you make me hate fantasy football.
Well, we can get into your really weird obsession with this in just a second. But I posted a poll on Tony Mack and the Triplet Twitter, at Tony Mack Triplet. Would you like us to have a fantasy football guest every Saturday? He can come on and set you guys up, tell you who to start, tweet in your questions, and we can get his opinion on all the hot players going around right now. Aaron, is that something you'd be interested in? Because on Tom's show, we've set up, we had a bunch of guys on that we set up to see who we would like to continue on that show, and we ended up going with a good friend of Tom's that he's known for a long time. And there was another really, really good fantasy insider that's not going to be a weekly guest, but that clears him up to come on our show. Is that something you'd be interested in?
I always look for fantasy football knowledge and insight, so absolutely. And it would also give me a chance to every week, you know, scratch that fantasy football bug until until Sunday, because everybody knows that I'll be doing it. I'm big on, you know, who do I need to pick up off the wire this week, especially late in the season. When your team's a little banged up and you got a big game coming up and the playoffs are on the line, and there's no feeling as better as when you make a waiver wire pickup and then that week he goes off and helps you win a big game. You feel like a genius.
I've always been on the other end of those waiver wire pickups. I've never had one of those guys come in and produce for me really well, but I have been in the playoffs where there was one time. I've never not made the playoffs in fantasy football, but I've never won a league in fantasy football. I always squeeze into the playoffs. I might have been the four seed my first time I ever played, but I always squeeze in 1-3. There was one league
that I played at an old job of mine, and I was dominant. I lost one regular season game. That was it. Going into the playoffs, it was an 8-man league. Going into the playoffs, I had lost one game, and I'm talking, I blew everybody. I think some of my big guys were on bye that week. Going into the playoffs, first round, I got knocked off. Got knocked out first round because I think Carlos Hyde or somebody came in and just had a week like they don't normally have ever. So those waiver wire pickups you're talking about, or those weeks where one guy just performs way above expectations, always on the other end of that one, never on the good side of that one.
And I and see, you say you've been spoiled because you've been in the playoffs in every league you've been in. And every
time, I wouldn't call it spoiled. It's great to make the playoffs, but I've never won the playoffs. So kind of cursed once I get there.
And I made the very first year I played fantasy football, the one league I was in, I made the playoffs, got beaten in the semifinals. I think ended up coming in third. Then I had this playoff drought for a while, and then a few years ago started getting in two leagues. So now I'm in two leagues about every year. And I made the finals of that and got beat in another league. And then finally, last year, I was in the playoffs of both my leagues, and I won my secondary league, and then in my league with all, like I said, the big league, what I live for is the league with my high school friends in it, and I made the finals against my own brother, who I'm the bane of his existence in fantasy football because he just gets so tired of my obsession. And you know, they play those two week segments, and he got up by it felt like 200 points on me that first week. It was like 210 to 87 or something like that. And I had no prayer going into that final week of the season. And so I was like, well, I got to make some changes. So, and because Ezekiel Elliott was on my team, I knew he wasn't going to play week 17. Ben Roethlisberger wasn't going to play week 17. So I just threw all those guys to the bench, and I went out and picked up Sam Bradford. I went out and picked up Zach Zinner from the Detroit Lions. And it just so happened that Bradford and Kyle Rudolph, who I started that week, went off for about 20 and 35 apiece. Edelman had 40 in week 17. And then Zach Zinner had about 20. And I made this valiant comeback on Sunday Night Football because of Zach Zinner. And I took the lead only to get beat by 10. And Kevin said that he had never sweated so much over fantasy football in his life because he knew that if I had come back and beat him with those guys, that
having to sit there and watch that with you would be the worst part. Like knowing that you're coming back, knowing you're taking the lead,
and
knowing
he was sitting
who
there
you
with
are.
Me. He was sitting there with me.
How passive aggressive you can celebrate. This is a guy who could be beating you by 300 points in anything and act like he's losing. Act like the victim. He acts like the victim in just about everything he does, and it just pisses you off that much more. So just sitting there, like, knowing you're coming back, watching you come back, I know you're not sitting there, oh, I'm coming for you, Kevin. You're sitting there like, oh, I'm beat. He's not going to be able to do this. Oh, yeah, I'm gonna come 1 point shy, and I'm just going to fall short, and it's going to suck. That's the worst part about watching anything with you, is you don't have a chance. Even though you are the victim here, you don't have the chance to play the victim because you're taking that role. So I can understand why Kevin is probably just infuriated with that. But the question I have for you mentioned, you know, joining a couple leagues. I've done one fantasy league. I've been in like three or four fantasy leagues in 1 year. How many is enough for you? Because let me tell you something, three is almost too much.
Yeah, I like two because it just gives me some good variety. Three, I think, would be a little bit too much. I just don't know if I could see. I've got my loyalty, like with the two leagues, you can devote your allegiance and your loyalty to at least one, and then have the other one and be pretty invested in that. But once you get to three, I think that's too much love for fantasy football to spread out amongst three teams.
Well, when you get into three, even sometimes into two, you get into where you're playing a player. Like, you've got a player playing for you that you want to do well, but in another league, that player is playing against you. And that happens more often than not. It's usually like a really high-profile player. Like, you might have Aaron Rodgers in one league, but somebody got him in the other league, and you're playing in that week. So you're hoping he does well, but at the same time, you're not. So you really have to, you know, prioritize which league you want to be your favorite. And that's the worst part about it. But there's just something so addicting about it. You in your mind, you're like, well, yeah, ideally this sucks because I have a player I need to root for it and root against at the same time. But in your mind, you're trying to figure out a way to make that work in your favor and continue to do three leagues because you don't ever, once you're in there, want to get out. And once again, this year, I am in three leagues, and I've had opportunities to be in upwards to five or six. But you have to draw it. I take it from me, whether it's an 8, 10, or 12-man league, stop at 3 max. 3 is the maximum.
Yeah, not like I said, I'm in 2, and I've got the one league that is definitely my favorite because it's got, you know, all my high school friends in it. There's typically about 16 people in it. And then I've got a secondary league that's just a couple other people. It's only about an 8-team league, so I definitely favor the bigger league. And that the bigger leagues are really more interesting because you lose the stars and the studs get picked by really early within the first two rounds, and then yep. You have to be very careful about who you pick the rest of the way down because you're very well likely to pick somebody who's not going to produce at all or have a big breakout season. So it's in the big leagues, it's really important to get those sleepers late in the draft.
You find out very quickly when you get into bigger leagues that you really have to be inclined to knowing who the backups for some of these guys are. If they have the potential to come in and start producing right away, you have to know who they are, or else it can hurt you big time because a lot of the times the guys you're playing against do know this stuff. All right, well, that music means it is the end of the first hour. We like the input. We are going to work on getting a fantasy football guest to come in on Saturdays and help us out for a segment. When we get back, playoff predictions from Aaron and myself. That's right here. Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Welcome back. Tony Mack in the Triplet. Hour number 2. Trey, we left you with some...
Yeah, we're talking ball! Talking ball!
Arky Shea, everybody. Arky Shea. As if he's not on the radio enough. There he is again.
Hope this show sucks.
Anyways, our playoff picture is going to be way better than Arky's, which we're going to get into here shortly. But first... There's no way to avoid it, Aaron. There's no way to get around this spectacle, this event. If you notice, I'm avoiding calling it a fight because it's really not going to be one. But there is this unavoidable, just cataclysmic event that if you're not watching, if you're not paying attention to, you're going to be way out of the loop because this is the next big thing. I mean, it's huge, and that is Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor, tonight. That's right, it's already here. It's tonight. My plans have drastically changed on watching it. I was supposed to go to an affiliate day game at Nissan Stadium tomorrow. That's not happening, so I was going to spend the evening in Nashville finding a place to watch it. Turns out I'll be in Florence. I'm going to Buffalo Wild Wings, getting in line, probably after the show, to get in line and go watch this fight. But it's going to be a hassle. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to suck to stand in line and wait. There was one time I went to Buffalo Wild Wings with a friend of mine to watch a John Bones Jones fight that he wanted to watch, and we waited for an hour and a half to get a seat. So this is a big deal, and a lot of people go to these places to watch fights like this, and this isn't a normal event. This is huge. So it's going to be even longer of a wait, and I'm putting myself through hell, but I'm doing that because there's just something about this. There's going to be something, a comment made before or after, something that happens in the ring, whether it be Mayweather just absolutely pummel McGregor, McGregor get frustrated and start kicking and lose 90% of his purse, or McGregor pulling out a stunner, or going the distance like we expected. There's just some pull to this event that you have to see. You have to see it happen. There's just been too much hype about it to where if you miss it, you've missed everything. So, and it's probably going to be like the eclipse. Whatever happens is going to be quick and subtle and probably disappointing for a lot of people. But it doesn't matter at this point. That doesn't matter. We've had Conor McGregor come out here and talk all his crap. We've had Floyd Mayweather, something we've never seen before, get beat and talking smack. It's just they've done such a good job, which we knew they would, at making this thing so damn entertaining that we have to pay attention to it. Like, are you going to find a way to watch the fight? Because I'm sucked in. I'm in the business, as Tom Abraham says. I have to. There's going to be something that happens. I'm guaranteeing you. There's going to be something that happens that I have to pay attention to. Are you going to watch this thing?
Well, I had some plans to watch it. Now I'm just not sure if I'm going to be able to. If I did, I would have to watch it at home and pay $100 of my own money to watch it, which to me, it's not worth paying $100. I would rather go wait at Buffalo Wild Wings, and I really don't want to do that.
You can come to Florence and wait with me.
I could, but and like I said, we had had plans, but even if you're going to split it with some people, it's still going to cost you some money. And here's the thing. Here's what I think about this fight. And a lot of people aren't going to like me, but this fight is completely – it's just for show.
Please call it what it is. It's not a fight.
It's just –
it's an event. It's happening.
It's an event. It's all for show. It's all for the money that's going to be made, the ticket sales, the pay-per-view sales, all this stuff. And all of it is contracted. Everything that I think everything, and I'm almost 100% sure that this fight is, we all know Floyd Mayweather is going to win because it's in the contract. When these two got together and they got in a room, a conference room with their agents, their lawyers, just a room, it's McGregor and Mayweather and then a bunch of guys in suits. They sat down, they hashed this thing out detail by detail. Floyd said, all right, I got to make this much money, and I'm going to guarantee you this much money. And plus, I mean, Floyd's guarantee was $100 million?
Minimum.
And Connor's guaranteed $30 million.
Minimum.
Which dwarfs anything that he's ever made on any kind of UFC fight. So his payout, considering what he's made in the past, is going to be huge. And that doesn't include, you know, all the pay-per-view. I mean, Every other thing that, because Floyd was guaranteed 100. He was guaranteed 100 in the Pacquiao fight and ended up with 250.
That's like endorsements and stuff like that.
All that other stuff.
Promotions.
And so he made $250 million on the Pacquiao fight, and he was guaranteed 100. So he'll probably, I think he will at least get that this time. And Connor will, I think he'll pull 100.
Yeah, they're saying he's probably going to eclipse 100 million.
And so, and everything, all this, it's all in the contract. It's contracted that Floyd said, I'll do it. So you can make more money than you ever have in your life. You're going to make more money tonight than you ever have and ever will in the future if you fight me. But, so I'll come out of retirement and I'll fight you, but I'm going to win. We're going to go 12 rounds, and I'm going to win by unanimous decision.
So is that your pick?
Yeah. Floyd
going
Mayweather,
the distance?
Yes. Floyd. It's going to – it's contracted to go the distance. Every punch that they land – oh, that was in the contract.
See, that's exactly why I changed my mind. I'm not inviting you to come watch the fight with me in Florence because of that right there. Every time
somebody lands a
McGregor lands a punch, or McGregor looks at him and spits into a little bucket, or you get like a little shade of blood that he's trying to hide from the camera. Oh, that's in the contract. They don't want to. They did that on purpose.
Oh, second round, two consecutive head punches by McGregor. Oh, that was in the contract.
Yeah, see, don't come to Florence. Don't watch it with me.
Yeah, it's going the distance. It's going 12 rounds, but Floyd Mayweather's going to win by unanimous decision. It's going to be very similar to the Pacquiao fight, and you're right, it's going to be disappointing. But, I mean, people are going to spend so much money, and I would if I could. But I just don't know if I want to sit there and watch a fight that I already know what the outcome's going to be. And it's going to go 12 rounds, and it's going to be – and Floyd Mayweather's going to win by unanimous decision because they signed contracts dictating that's what was going to happen. Because Floyd guaranteed McGregor making more money than he's ever had in his entire life and more than he's going to make in his entire life after this, just off this one fight.
I can very much so see this going the distance. But something tells me Mayweather is going to toy around with him, let McGregor, you know, like you said, it's in the contract to make it entertaining. He's going to let McGregor do everything he can, you know, kind of rope it open, throw all his punches. Mayweather's going to do his thing, be defensive for a few rounds, you know, kind of toy with him, throw some jabs in there. And I think he's really going to turn it on later in the fight, and I think he knocks him out in the ninth round. I think Mayweather KOs him in either ninth or tenth round. I don't think it goes. I can see it going the distance, but I like Mayweather to end this thing and knock him out because I think it's going to be there any chance he wants. If there's any, I think he's going to have the opportunity all night long to knock McGregor out, and I think he's going to take that opportunity in the ninth round.
But see, I don't see that happening because I think that would be in violation of the contract. A KO by anybody is in violation of the details in the contract.
I don't think so. The only way I could see this going to decision, it would be unanimous, but a lot of people would speculate, well, did you see this round McGregor had? He won this round. That was promising. He won a late round. Let's get a rematch. I don't think these guys, because it's not going to be competitive, I think they're anticipating this being a big letdown, but they just know they're going to get the money for it. I think they're wanting this to be a one and done. They're going to get their entertainment value out of it early in the fight. Then they're going to end the fight. That way, they're going to end it on an exclamation mark. That way, you know, exclamation point. That way, you know that there's not going to be a rematch. This fight's not coming back. We've had it. We've had our fun. Y'all were disappointed. We made our money. We got you, suckers. It's over.
And I'm also all this trash talk, all this the stare down yesterday with McGregor screaming in Floyd's face. I mean, I'm like that was already pre-discussed.
That's the best. I don't believe that.
McGregor's always done that. He's like, you sell this as best you can. They're both like let's just sell this the best we can. They shook on this is all hashed out detail by detail, this whole process.
I disagree with you because I think Conor McGregor could get put in the ring and his opponent could be the Lord Jesus Christ himself, and McGregor would guarantee he would knock him out in three rounds. That's just who Conor McGregor is. He doesn't lose to anybody.
The specific details of the trash talk, when to trash talk and what to say, yeah, maybe that's not. But they're both just trying to sell this and be salesmen of this event.
Sure, I'm sure they put him out there and said, here, you know, go out and make this look like a lot of fun. Go just be awful to each other, which you're not going to be able to tell Conor McGregor when and what to say. That's just, you can't put the reins on that guy there. I'm sure they just, you know, they told him, hey, this is y'all's minimum purse and everything. Here's how the fight's going to go. Don't get too crazy. Don't fight each other during the press conferences, but you have free reign to go out there and yell whatever you want to yell. Just go make it look good. And I'm sure that's what they did because you don't have to contract anything or you don't have to go in there and feed McGregor anything to say. He's going to be able to come out there and talk the best trash ever. And that's the one place he stunned Mayweather in this entire thing. He stunned Mayweather in the ability to talk trash because Mayweather on the boxing side was one of those guys who could put fear in you and he could get the better of you in the press conferences and the meetings. He talks the better garbage. Well, in this case, that's not the case. Some people gave one of their little trash talk meetings to Floyd and said he won it. I disagree. I think McGregor's won every single one that I've seen, and it hasn't even been close because McGregor's ruthless. He doesn't hesitate. He acts like nothing gets to him. You can tell some of these comments gets to Floyd. He wants to rush to get his comments out, and he wants to try to beat you. He wants to try to better what you just said. Well, that's the thing. He's trying to better something you already said. McGregor's not coming out trying to better anything he said because anything coming out of his mouth is already better and just more brutal than anything Mayweather can say. And that's been the best part to me is just watching Floyd be stunned at some of the stuff Mayweather gets out there and says to him.
And this is just me. I felt like, because the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight was, what was it, 2 years ago now? It's 2015. I felt like the Pacquiao Mayweather fight was just bigger. Like it was bigger. It was more anticipated. I felt like there was more on the more at stake, and I was way more into that than I am into this because of this being a desperate attempt to make money, which obviously that's what it's going to do by taking the best guy, the best UFC guy, and the best boxer that they have to offer to try to keep both sports alive, really. UFC has taken over boxing because boxing is dead.
Well, see, that's the problem with the whole matchup. McGregor's not the best UFC guy. He's a really good one, but he's not necessarily the best. He's not undefeated. You know, he's shown his weakness in his said sport, which is another reason why it's just crazy that this fight happened.
It's like I said, it's contracted basically just to sell tickets and to sell. It's going to make so much money in just a small amount of time. But like I said, I think Mayweather-Pacquiao was bigger. I almost felt like that pulled more money. But you're right. This one's going to make more money because this is going to pull people, boxing fans and UFC fans, into one to watch this. So it's going to make more. But when did they finalize this to fight tomorrow? To fight today? When was it? was it June?
I think it was early June, maybe. Yeah, it was a couple months ago.
I just felt like the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight got
finalized a lot.
Finalized
sooner.
A lot.
They were talking for like 3 years about that.
Yeah,
fight,
I think that helped the buildup of Mayweather, because Mayweather-Pacquiao was really should have fought what about 5 years before they actually
yeah,
did.
Yeah, they should have fought 2010.
And of course, if they'd have fought 2010, I think Pacquiao would have won. But
here's the reason that just, that I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. Here's the reason that that Mayweather-Pacquiao fight was more anticipated in your mind and a lot of people's mind: the uncertainty of who was going to win. A lot of people actually believed, myself included, that Pacquiao had a chance to take the fight to Mayweather, to finally be the guy that gets Mayweather out of Mayweather's game, get him out of playing defensive boxing, and get him to come to you. That wasn't the case, but that's what everybody thought. They thought that he had a legitimate chance to win that fight. Everybody bought that fight because they were two guys the best at what they do, and they were really good at their job. This one's making more money because it has nothing to do with them being the best at what they do. It has to do with them being big, like laughable spectacles at times. And that is the problem we have all across society, and this fight sums that up. There are plenty of times, people that are famous in the media nowadays, on TV nowadays, you don't get famous, you rarely get famous for being really good at what you do. Like, I went to school to do this, and I'm not saying I'm really good, but I'm only 25 years old. I got a lot of room to grow. But that is my focus, is to focus on getting really good at this thing and being the best I can at this. You know, in reality, that's probably not going to make me very famous or very popular. What will make me very famous or very popular? Being adequate at what I do and making an ass of myself, because that's what people do. The Kardashians do it. McGregor does it, and he's about to get over $100 million for looking like a fool. He's not a good boxer. He's getting paid $100 million to suck at a boxing match because he just comes in there and he can yell at people. So that's just a bigger problem. This fight sums up a bigger problem that we have. I'm sucked into it, though. It makes me want to watch it. I get it. It's unfortunate that that's the time we come to, that most people, and you compared the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight to it, and that's a perfect comparison. You're comparing a fight that was the highest, you know, bot fight ever between two guys who are very good at what they do. And now that's being trumped by a fight where one guy's clearly better than what the other guy does, because one guy doesn't even do this. He's not even a boxer, but he's getting paid to be a boxer because he's an ass.
Like, it's like asking the best rugby player to come play in the NFL, or even in a smaller scale, go let the best rugby player play in the CFL, which is more like, because if the best rugby player basically came and played in the NFL, that Jared Hayne, when he signed with the 49ers for a year, or that was technically, I guess it's Australian rules football, but very similar. And that's kind of what it is, and I think it's just kind of ridiculous.
Agreed, and we're not saying that he can't be good at it. Sure, Conor can probably be a good boxer, but I'm not saying that. You're setting him up for a cataclysmic failure, and here's why. Take Rico Gathers, for example. You know, he's a tight end for the Cowboys. He was a basketball player. You take a really good basketball player and you're making him play football, or he goes to play football. He's not bad. He's pretty good. But when you compare him to the best tight ends like Rob Gronkowski, Rob's better because he's been doing it longer. He's to the if you put Rico Gathers in the NFL, and you're putting him in there to compete with everybody, not just the best. And you're saying he's pretty good, but if he went straight from basketball just to be compared right next to Rob Gronkowski, he went into the NFL saying I'm going to beat Rob Gronkowski out for his spot and went to the Patriots. Then you're looking at something a little different. You're like, well, no, you didn't play football. You're coming in and trying to challenge the best tight end in the game when you have little experience. That's what you're doing here. We're not saying that Conor can't be a good boxer, but you're taking a guy who's never boxed before ever. You're not putting him against an average boxer with an average record, or even a pretty good boxer. You're already setting him up against the best, period. He didn't get any prelim fights, which it's not anybody's fault but his. He came in and went right for the big show, and that's not what he's focused on. He's not worried about being considered a good boxer. It's all about the money. That's what he's worried about. That's what this entire fight boils down to, and I know it, and I think it's ridiculous, but you know what? At the same time, I'm sucked into it, and I'm going to watch it.
And it's just funny to listen to also what people are and what sports people are trying to amp up as, like, big factors in this fight. Like, oh, what's the effect of Mayweather and McGregor using 10-ounce gloves? Oh, that's going to be huge. That's going to make a difference. What about the gloves? 10-ounce gloves?
It's actually 8-ounce. They agreed on 8-ounce.
8-ounce. Are you kidding me? That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Who Who cares what how big the gloves are that they're using? That is so such a minuscule detail.
It affects McGregor a little because McGregor, his entire career, has used 4-ounce gloves, a little heavier, and he's already slow. So I think that affects him a little bit, but the fact that they're blowing it up and it's headlined on ESPN when they agreed on 8-ounce gloves, the fact that it was the headline on ESPN for
that's the only thing you could talk about that even tries to even make this thing make sense from a competitive sports standpoint, and that's why I think this is contracted, because how could it even go on if it wasn't? Because it would end in one round. That's why I think it's going to go the distance, because that's the way that they're going to get their money's worth out of it. That's the easiest way to feed people what they want to see, is by giving them a contracted 12-round unanimous decision Floyd Mayweather victory fight. And that's the only way that they can justify this, is by making it go the distance and by, of course, Floyd winning. That's the only way they can justify this making sense, is by contracting it out and making sure that it happens.
Well,
I know that's my opinion, but it's just, think about it, people. Think about it.
We're talking about the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor spectacle we got going on tonight, and there's just no way, when you think about the impact this has on the sport of boxing, the same way it would if McGregor and Mayweather agreed to get in the octagon together, the impact it would have on UFC. If a guy who's never boxed before comes in a rivaled sport, a sport that, you know, that other people is starting to get more popular than boxing, it was to come in and beat the best, not just beat a boxer, a guy who's never professionally boxed before from a competitive sport, a competing sport, UFC, was to come in and beat the best in boxing. Think about what that does to boxing. I mean, you're looking at it right now. Wow, this above average, pretty good UFC fighter can come in and then knock off an undefeated guy in boxing. Well, UFC's way better than boxing. Well, the boxing side of this arrangement is not going to allow that to happen. Same way UFC would have it. Mayweather would not be able to go in there in a contracted fight. There's no way, if he agreed to a fight with John Bones Jones or whoever the head of UFC happens to be at the time they would fight, there's no way they allow him to go in there and win that fight. So, of course, I think Mayweather's going to win the fight. No way McGregor's going to win. I just hope there's some entertainment factor about it. Because if McGregor was able to go in there, I think the sport of boxing takes a huge, huge shot if a guy who's never professionally boxed before goes in there and doesn't just beat somebody, he beats the best. He beats the best right now, undefeated right now, and the best defensive fighter, period, ever to ever do it.
It totally just unseats boxing completely. It makes it it unvalidates boxing as, you know, as not only relevant, but just, I mean, you're right. That it
will always take a backseat to UFC.
It will always take a backseat to UFC if this were to happen. And Floyd Mayweather is the only name in boxing that's keeping it alive. I mean, most people have heard of Deontay Wilder. Most people have heard of him. And he would be, I mean, he's undefeated. Heavyweight boxing is beyond dead. Heavyweight boxing's been dead since the 90s. And now it's gone to this welterweight, middleweight fighters and Pacquiao, Mayweather, and it was still alive for a little while, and now it's completely dead. And yeah, Floyd Mayweather's been out of boxing for 2 years since he fought Berto, and what a joke of a fight that was. I don't know, unless you were a Floyd Mayweather fan, diehard Floyd Mayweather fan, you did not spend money on Mayweather Berto. Are you kidding me? But yeah, I mean, it totally unvalidates boxing if that were to happen. So that's it. Just can't happen. It can't happen, and it has to go 12 rounds, unanimous decision, Floyd Mayweather. It's going to happen.
Well, if you want your hopes to get high and you want to waste money, like I'm probably going to do tonight, buy this fight. If you want a good fight, watch Canelo and Triple G. That coming up in a few weeks, I believe. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, as promised, as advertised, Aaron and I will give you our college football playoff teams as of right now, and that's next. I promise you, although he's wearing a Stanford shirt, I highly doubt he's got Stanford in his playoff. That's right here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. That's right, Aaron and I, listen up close. We're about to give you our playoff predictions
this season, which I'm sure you guys have heard plenty of playoff talk already, but we wanted to save it until this week. Don't really want to get into playoff predictions next week, because next week we're going to be talking about all the games that we've got going on, and we've got plenty to talk about next week. We're going to have Sunday games. We're going to have Monday games. We're going to have everything. So we've got to get in there and talk about all of that. So right now we're going to get into our playoff predictions. Aaron, I'm going to start with you. Give me number four for you. We're going to start at the bottom, work it to the top. Give me number four and give me why. Schedule. You know, give me a reason why you think they're going to make it.
All right, well,
my number four team, and I think you're going to be fond of this, I'm going with Oklahoma as my number four spot.
I like that.
And I, now initially, I had picked, like, way back after the season ended, you know, right after Clemson won the national championship, going into the summer, I still had the same top four. My four, I was like, oh, this college football season is going to be boring because the top four teams are already decided, and the playoff teams are going to be Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, and USC. And I was set on that for a while. But then I started thinking about schedules. I started thinking about a lot of different things. And then the initial polls came out. And in the coaches' poll and in the AP poll, Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, and USC are all in the top four. And I started thinking to myself, there's no way that those four teams stay in the top four and end up, regardless of if they move down, whether they lose one game and then bump back up, the top four teams in the preseason AP poll will not be the four playoff teams.
Agreed.
It's hot. If it happens, that would be amazing, in my opinion. It would just, it's incredibly unlikely. So that's one reason, just the sheer unlikelihood of that. So that's one reason why I bumped Oklahoma up. Number two, they have a favorable schedule considering that the Big 12 is a little bit down. And I'm not discrediting the Big 12 because I think Texas, Kansas State, and Oklahoma State are all worthy opponents. But Texas, first year under Tom Herman, not sure what they're going to do. Kansas State, that they have to go to Manhattan to play a...
It's always a tough place to play
with Bill Snyder. Tough place to play with Bill Snyder. That's a tough game. Then they go to Oklahoma State, and...
And need I remind you, one of these three teams, as worthy of opponents as you say they are, probably going to have to play Oklahoma again in the Big 12 Championship.
In the Big 12 Championship in the last week. And just looking at Oklahoma's schedule, first thing I really noticed, and this is odd to me, is they don't play Oklahoma State last this year.
They moved it because they're anticipating them probably meeting up with them again.
Oh, okay.
In the conference championship game. And don't forget the trip to Ohio State they have week two.
They do, and I have them... I think that there's a good chance that they, if they lose this season, that will be the game. I do think Oklahoma loses once, but I think they win the Big 12 because I think they're just more talented than every other team in the Big 12. Yes, Oklahoma State, but when has Oklahoma... I can only think of one time in recent memory that Oklahoma State has beaten Oklahoma when both teams have been relevant and good and supposed to be good. Even though they're at home, I still got Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I think Oklahoma State's going to be... I think they're a little bit overrated so far at the start of this season.
It's a good point you made, and I've made this point several times before, and that is the point you just mentioned about the one time they've both been relevant playing each other. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, that was the Brandon Weeden year, the year that Oklahoma State had a really good chance to go to the national championship game. I know Bob Stoops isn't there anymore, but under his reign with in Oklahoma and Mike Gundy's time at Oklahoma State, if they played each other and Oklahoma State wasn't ranked within the top 15 with that one exception, Oklahoma doesn't just beat them. Oklahoma smacks the hell out of them. Oklahoma wipes the floor with them. If Oklahoma State is relevant, period, Oklahoma usually wins. Oklahoma State has beaten Oklahoma twice in Mike Gundy's time. One of them came when they were both like 8-4, 8-3, 8-4 in 2014. And then that one time he had the Brandon Weeden year, and they beat Oklahoma. Other than that, there's been several times where Oklahoma State's been in the top 15, top 10, where Oklahoma has just absolutely wiped the floor. Whether it's on the road or not, Oklahoma always has that advantage. So that's one of the reasons I'm not worried about Oklahoma State.
think that outside of Ohio State and really, I think the two best chances they had to lose, because I think they're going to get Texas this year, because I mean, Texas is going to be way better than they were a year ago under Tom Herman.
Texas will be the team that I don't want. Will be the one team I would not want to see again in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, because I think that by the end of the season, because they meet October 14th, by the end of the season, Texas and Tom Herman will have kind of gotten more things together and be a pretty hot team. But I don't plan on them beating Oklahoma right then in October. So you go to Ohio State week two, really tough, and then you go to Kansas State and to Oklahoma State. Those are the three big tough games, and I think
they have a road game to Kansas. All right.
Oh yeah, late in the season, Kansas. They fought hard today. Do you remember that? Have we told you that story?
Yeah,
Kansas fighting hard.
the best thing I've seen from Kansas football is that they have that thing going around on the internet where they put My Heart Will Go On to special moments and in movies and everything, and the caption is always "This song makes everything better." Well, they put that song to Kansas kicking the winning field goal against Texas, and it's been my pinned tweet for like 2 months. Because it's probably the greatest thing I've ever seen. Anyways, so you got Oklahoma at four. Where this is, me and Aaron, we're giving our playoff picks. Aaron starting at number four. Who you got at three?
All right, at three. This was tough. This was very tough. And I didn't really have to swallow any pride, but I had to really think about this one, and a lot of factors had to go in. But, and them going back for a second straight year is questionable, to say the least. But I've got Washington, actually, as my number three. And this was the most difficult decision to make because they're not as talented as USC is, I don't think. But I started thinking, number one, they have an easier schedule than USC does. Their schedule is more favorable. Their big out-of-conference game is Rutgers. That is their tough out-of-conference game. On the road, though, in Piscataway.
Yeah, once again, Washington with a really easy schedule. USC has a tough Stanford game, like, early
week
on
two.
In the season.
And we talked about that last week, that Stanford game, which I've got USC schedule pulled up as well. They get Stanford at home, but it's early in the season. They get Texas at home. And then they go to Notre Dame. I know Notre Dame's not going to be really anything this year, but they have more tough road games. They go to Washington State. They go to Colorado in that next to last week. That's not going to be an easy game.
Yeah, I ultimately think that Washington is going to get the better of USC in the conference championship
game. I do, too.
Game.
And if they play in the conference championship game, because, they may not. And Washington definitely, they get all – Washington, they go to Colorado as well, but they go to Stanford. And other than that, they don't have a tough game on the road. They get Washington State at home. They get UCLA at home. I mean, their schedule is very favorable. And if they were to play USC, I think they would get them. And I'm on the Sam Darnold hype train. I think Sam Darnold is as good as advertised. I'm buying him 100%, but I'm not buying USC. I was sipping the Kool-Aid, but I'm not going to buy USC because USC has a trend of when they're highly ranked, especially recently, that they disappoint. And I think they're going to be one of the biggest disappointments this year. I think they might go 9-3 or so. Darnold's going to be great, but he's not going to be good enough to carry this team. And another reason I give Washington the edge over USC and why I'm going Washington to make the playoff is they have the better coach. Chris Peterson is the better coach. And Jake Browning, of course, he just takes care of the football. They still got a lot of guys coming back. They're going to miss some, but they still have a lot of talent coming back. I think it's just enough to get them back to the playoff because of their very favorable schedule and good head coach and returning talent. So I've got Washington as my number three.
All right, Oklahoma four, Washington three. Who's number two?
All right, number two, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And these first two teams are not going to surprise anybody. at number two, I've got Ohio State. I've had Ohio State, and I think every year that we've done this, I've had Ohio State in my playoff.
There's a big development coming. Go ahead and finish.
I've got Ohio State. I think that – now, Ohio State's schedule, they get Oklahoma at home. If they were to slip up, I still think that they're – really, their tough games is – I mean, they get Penn State at home, which they didn't last year. They get Michigan State at home, which they didn't last year. They're the one schedule that I don't have pulled up.
So,
let me pull it up right quick.
And I'm assuming that number one team is going to be the Alabama Crimson Tide. We're giving our playoff picks. Aaron so far has given us Oklahoma at four, Washington at 3, and now Ohio State at 2.
And so Ohio State, they're really tough games in conference. They get Michigan State at home. They get Penn State at home. They go to Michigan, which we already knew that, and then they go to Iowa in early November. And Iowa, of course, got Michigan last year on the road in a November game. But I just don't see it. I think the schedule works out well. They get past Oklahoma. They have room to slip up once on the way. So I got Ohio State at 2. And number one, yes, I'm going with Alabama. I've tried to sheer away from picking them just because I want some variety in the playoff. But with four teams getting in and with Nick Saban as the head coach, they're not going to go anywhere. Considering that the SEC, outside of Alabama, the SEC is taking a step back, at least it seems to. The only team that I think can really challenge them this year is Auburn, and that's if they, you know, kind of meet their expectations, which I really hope they do. But I got Alabama at number one.
If Oklahoma was able to pull off the Ohio State upset, that would really change some things for me on my side, because you would have to think they would be in there. I would think that Ohio State would be able to run the table and get back in there. I think Washington's got an easy enough schedule to get in there, and Alabama obviously is probably going to be there. But that's not my playoff. But here's the interesting thing, and it's funny you said that, because I had an what-if scenario, and mine was almost the exact same, except I had Oklahoma at 3, Washington at 4, if that were to happen. But here's the interesting thing, and the reason why I shied away from that. It's very tough to do this with four spots, five conferences, but you ended up leaving out, you know, a conference that has been represented in all three playoffs, a conference who has been in the last two championship games and who has just won the national championship, and that's the toughest part about this, and I almost did that in mine, and I got nervous, and I had to go back. I had to put an ACC team in there, and I'll tell you why that's so hard to figure out if they get left out or not. But what's your reason for leaving the ACC?
Now, I got Florida State winning the ACC, but here's the thing. Here's why I left Florida State out for the most part, is their schedule is tough. They're in one of the toughest divisions in football.
They're in the toughest division in football this year.
Arguably, and they played the best team in football, period, opening week. So, assuming that Florida State gets beat by Alabama, so they get beat by Alabama week one, they got one loss. They basically have to run the table.
And here's the point with it. Here's my problem with this, and here's what I ultimately decided on. My playoff, I've got Alabama at number one. I'm going to go and run through mine. I got Alabama at one. I've got Ohio State at two. This is if Ohio State beats Oklahoma. I've got Florida State at three, and I've got Washington/Oklahoma at four. I think they fight for a spot, or it could be, you know, Oklahoma at three and Washington, Florida State fighting for a spot. And here's why. You've got, like you're about to say, you've got Florida State potentially losing to Alabama week one, which I think they do, their own one. They have to run the table in order to guarantee them a playoff spot. They have to run the table, win the ACC championship, be, what, 11-1, 12-1 after the ACC championship game. They're automatically in the playoff. But here's the interesting scenario. You've got Florida State losing to Alabama. Maybe they slip up to Louisville again, or maybe Clemson gets the better of them. But they still win their division. They win their division 10-2, win their conference 11-2. Very tough schedule. And then you've got a Washington team, undefeated maybe, one-loss Washington, Pac-12 champion. You've got the better record versus the better schedule. Who are you going to put in? Because last year, they proved to us that they don't give a damn about Washington's piss poor schedule. They're going to put them in if they're undefeated. So what if you have an undefeated Washington against a two-loss Florida State, a very ACC champion, trying to get in, who had clearly the better schedule? Who gets in? Who gets in at that point? Personally, I think the committee puts Washington in, but me, I've got to go with the same thing I was saying last year. You got to go with the better schedule. You've got to reward the teams that are able to go out there and compete with better competition.
If it's one loss, Washington versus two-loss Florida State, I think you should take Florida. I think you take Florida State.
Absolutely.
Just more. But if Washington's unbeaten, I think they go Washington for sure. If Washington's if they're undefeated.
Undefeated Washington, one-loss Florida State.
That, ooh.
Florida State's one loss is a close game to Alabama opening week of the season.
Opening week.
You've got to go Florida State.
I think that. I personally go Florida State.
Think about who they beat on the way. You beat Clemson. You beat Louisville. You got to beat NC State, who's got a really good defense this year, and then you've got to go beat either Miami or Virginia Tech.
And see, my thing is Florida State, though, they lose to Alabama week one. They got to roll through this schedule. They play Louisiana Monroe second, and then they get Miami and NC State in back-to-back weeks, tough games. Then they get two road trips to Wake Forest and Duke, but then they come back, they play Louisville at home, and then at the end of the season, they go to Clemson and then to Florida.
Yeah.
I know Florida, they should beat Florida, but that's a rivalry game, and it's on the road.
Right.
So, really, I just don't see them, after Alabama, it's like a new season because they can't lose another game. I just don't see them running through that schedule unscathed. And that's why I've left Florida
State
out.
And then some people would say, what about other teams? Well, I don't think you understand how tough Clemson's schedule is either. If you guys are thinking Clemson has a chance to get back there, sure, they've got pieces coming back that were very good last year. But, you know, you've got the most important position of football brand new. Week two, you've got Auburn coming to town. If you somehow squeak out of that one, guess what? The very next week after Clemson hosts Auburn, they go on the road to Louisville. That's right. You got to go on the road and take on the reigning Heisman Trophy winner who absolutely torched your defense last year, had a chance. If his receiver knew where he was on the field, had a chance, probably was going to beat you last year. And then after that, you got Boston College, which will be a strain on your offense because Boston College usually poses a very good defensive threat. And then right after that, you go to Virginia Tech. So get the hell out of here. Clemson, you're going to lose two minimum, probably three games, I think, this season. And then later on down the road, you've still got Georgia Tech, you've got NC State, Florida State. You just don't have it this year. I think you got a good coach, you got a talented team, but I just don't think you've got it early enough to make the playoff. So I don't think Clemson's out. I think Florida State's your best ACC chance to make the playoff. And here's another question I have for you. We got to get a break, but here's another question I have for you. Say Florida State squeezes in, okay? Say it's Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, and then you got Washington, Oklahoma fighting for a spot. You got one loss Pac-12 champion, Washington, one loss to Ohio State, Big 12 champion, Oklahoma. Who do you take?
I think you take Oklahoma because their loss would be – I mean, I know there's no such thing as good or bad. Good, you know, it's hard. People say, oh, there shouldn't be such thing as a loss is still a loss. But a loss to Ohio State, who's already in the playoff, versus a loss to whoever Washington lost to, you take Oklahoma. I think it's almost a no-brainer there.
One loss Oklahoma to Ohio State, undefeated Washington.
That's tougher. Again, and
exactly, but that's I know it's tougher, but those are the questions we have to answer. Because that happens. Last year, Washington was undefeated. A lot of people believe
they had the one loss.
Oh, they had the one loss.
To
people
USC.
Believe Penn State should get in because Penn State had a harder schedule, or even Michigan, or you know somebody like that who had better losses, and everybody had good arguments. So we're posing tough questions now that you have to think about because at the end of the season, you're going to have these things happen. Nothing. We found out very quickly that none of these things are perfect. We've had controversies every single year in the playoff. Baylor TCU getting left out the first year for the eventual national champion. The year after that, people didn't believe Oklahoma should have got in. They believed Michigan, or they believed Iowa had a chance to get in because their one loss was a very close championship game to Michigan State. They believe Ohio State could have squeezed in. Stanford could have squeezed in. And then this past year, you know, you had the Washington debate. So you have to ask yourself these questions because it's going to happen. But Aaron, you went with Alabama, Ohio State, Washington, Oklahoma. I'm going Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, Oklahoma for my playoff. We're going to be right back. When we get back, we'll set you up for next week, and we'll talk about some football that's going on today. That's right here on Tony Mack and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplett. Sadly, our last segment of the show. A few minutes here, but we're going to continue our trend. We gave you our playoff teams. Aaron going with top to bottom, Alabama, Ohio State, Washington, Oklahoma, leaving the ACC out. It is a pretty good reason, pretty tough division over there. So, I mean, understandable. And I went with Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, Oklahoma, squeezing in there. Missing a lot of, I understand Oklahoma's missing a lot of weapons. I get that. It's mainly experience because offensively they're able to reload. One of the most more contested backfields talent-wise for Oklahoma I've seen in a while. A lot of really young studs, four-star caliber guys mainly back there, fighting for you know two spots. So there's a lot of great competition I like seeing back there. Lincoln Riley mentioning that this is the deepest receiver core he's had. I understand that they're missing D.D. Westbrook, but they were missing Sterling Shepard last year too, and look what Westbrook did. So I think offense will be just fine. We're going to We're going to leave you with this on your mind. We got college football next week, week one next week. Aaron, week zero right now.
Let me just say how much I've come to love that week zero term.
I feel like week zero is like, it's like this secret, we're getting secret football. Like, like we're not supposed to know about it, but like, yeah, here's some football. Take this football and watch it. Enjoy it until next week. So, like, we get secret football today. Tell us some of the good games we should be paying attention to.
Well, the best game, well, obviously, there's two ranked teams playing today. South Florida is taking on San Jose State on the road. So, Quentin Flowers and the Bulls go on the road to face the Spartans in San Jose. And then 14-ranked Stanford is taking on the Rice Owls in Sydney, Australia. But Stanford is a 30.5-point favorite, so don't look for that one to be too competitive. The best games as far as where the spread is concerned, Oregon State is taking on Colorado State. Colorado State actually favored by 4. And then the other one as far as spread, and this is the one we mentioned a little bit last week, was Hawaii going on the road take on UMass. UMass sitting at 2.5-point favorites. Literally across the country, across the Pacific Ocean and across the country, Hawaii's traveling to take on UMass, the Warriors and the Minutemen. That one should be entertaining. If you just want good, or if you just want close, entertaining football, I bet you Hawaii and UMass is the way to go.
Yeah, I love that. I love that Stanford and Rice are going to Australia. I love that Rice is, you know, being wined and dined, pretty much like the Rice, the Owls, the football players being wined and dined and taken to this awesome place, you know, and just to get bent over and absolutely punished by Stanford. So, I mean, and we're not necessarily saying there's going to be a lot of great competitive football today. Certainly, you might see some of that. It might be competitive. It might not be the best brand of football you've seen, but it's freaking football, and it's real. It's not a scrimmage. It's secret football, but it's football. That starts at 1:30, as early as 1:30, Oregon State and Colorado State, probably one of the better games that we will see today, especially as far as the spread is concerned. And then you've got Portland State, BYU at 2 o'clock. If you want to see what BYU looks like before they take on LSU next week, go check that out. Hawaii, UMass is at 5 o'clock. South Florida and San Jose State will kick off at 6:30, while Stanford and Rice is the late game. 9 o'clock, little Pac-12 after dark. That's right.
But in the sunlight of Australia.
And that's okay. It's secret football, Aaron. We're not some... It's secret football.
That's why it's in Australia. It's supposed to be kept a secret.
And that's okay, because it's football, and it's back. And then starting Thursday, we get even more football that's back. I think Ohio State's playing Thursday. So, and the best part about all of this is we will be back next Saturday to get you guys ready for a fantastic slate of games to start week one, real football week one. For Aaron Triplett, I'm Tony Mack, and this is Tony Mack and the Triplett. Thank you guys for tuning in. Stay tuned next week for a great week of predictions of actual football. Tony Mack and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730-1039, The Ump.